Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium for the July 5th, 2012 edition. This is Michael Norris, and thus far I am joined by Jerry Oates, our third co-host. Bobby Simmons has had a little family thing he had to do. He's hoping to join us later tonight, and we're hoping he does. If not, Jerry and I will soldier on, and I think we'll do okay. What's going on?
We'll stumble through.
I said, we'll stumble through. What's going on?
Yeah, we'll get through it.
What's it like down there in the Sahara Desert of the United States in Georgia?
It has been brutal.
Oh, man.
I know. In Macon it's been like 105 actual temperature, over in Columbus like 107. Here today I think it was like 95, so it wasn't quite as bad here in Savannah. So, but it's been a smoker.
Does Savannah do a big 4th of July thing down there?
Oh yes, good Lord, yes. Down at Tybee does theirs on the 3rd, and then Savannah does theirs the night of the 4th.
Let's see, they're all over here along Long Island. In fact, I don't know if you saw it on the news, they had some people on a yacht watching the fireworks from off, they were off, you know, the coast out there, and the yacht capsized. And three children drowned.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
I didn't have to pay for anything. Where I'm staying, there's a right across the street from where I'm staying is a neighborhood. And they started early. They started Friday. And they've been shooting off fireworks every night. And then last night, they went till 3 o'clock in the morning, and I thought I was in Vietnam. I mean, I thought they were coming in my shooting them at my door the way it sounded. But so if you start hearing what sounds like gunfire, that means they had some left, and they're getting rid of them tonight.
Well, I tell you what, they don't spare any. You know, that stuff's expensive too.
I know it, and I can't believe, you know, this between the hotel and, you know, that neighborhood that somebody didn't call the police or something. I mean, they've been, or maybe the whole neighborhood was in on it, but I met Lon West for dinner last night, or yesterday afternoon, about 5:30, and I got back to the hotel about 7:15, 7:30, something like that. And I got out of my car, and I'm parked right, you know, not 15 feet from my hotel room. But I got out of my car and came in, got in my room, and the guy must have had like, you know, 30 packs of 100 or 200 firecrackers that he just lit all at one time, because it just went continuously for 10 minutes, nonstop.
That's insanity.
And it went all night, and then, like I said, till about 3 o'clock this morning. You know, I guess they're going to celebrate.
Evidently.
But it's been neat up here. The four horsemen of the Coal Brothers Circus is up here. Ron West is here. Tom Renesto Jr. is here. And as of yesterday, Bill Dundee got here. So I'm here. So.
Oh, why so many of y'all up there?
Well, we've got 7 towns to do. They've all got 2 towns apiece, and I've got 1. I'm the last town that they're doing. My shows aren't until the end of this month and first day of August. But it's always that way because there's so much you have to do and so many people you have to deal with dealing with that. So they usually have 4 or 5 guys here. But we're here, and the clown is here, and he's going to be here pretty much all month, too, because he goes from one of us to the other with shows. And so we're all going to get together at some point. We were kind of planning on doing it yesterday, and then Tom and Clown had to go work a show, a fireworks kind of concert last night. They went and handed out tickets and stuff like that, and Dundee was worn out from driving over from the Hudson Valley area, so it was just Ron and I. We went and grabbed a quick dinner, and then I came to the war zone, and he went back over to where he's.
Well, where's the actual show right now?
The show itself is in Turnbull, Connecticut. They started there yesterday. They will be there through Sunday, and then they'll come over here Sunday night.
Oh, okay.
And they're starting in Massapequa with Ron, and then they go to one of Tom's towns, then they go back to, then they go to Dundee in Southampton, then they go to Bayshore, which is another one of Ron's towns, then they go to another one of Tom's towns, then they go to Greenport, which is Dundee's town, and then they come to me. So they're back and forth, but they're all on the island. So at least they've got short jobs and everything. It won't be too hard on the crew itself. But,
oh, that's good.
But I'm just hoping the weather's actually has been nice. It was a little bit warm today, but it wasn't miserably hot. And but hopefully it'll be somewhat nice while the show's here, because it really makes a difference.
Well, I'm sure it does.
But we'll see. We normally do real well here. I mean, we get a lot of newspaper and television coverage and everything. So, but there's a lot to compete with. Only being 15, 20 miles from New York City, there's a lot to compete with. But we will see. We will see. I'm looking forward to the show getting here, but then. I guess from here I'll be headed south, but I don't know that for sure either, so we'll see.
Yeah, you never know.
But anyway, our guest tonight will be the legendary Paul the Butcher Vachon. Did you ever cross paths with him?
Yeah, I was trying to rattle my cage today, and I know I was, I'm pretty sure I was around him here in Georgia. And that would have, I'm sure, been the only place. But I don't know when he was here the last time.
I don't either. I was thinking maybe in the Carolinas, you guys, because he was there for a while. He and Doug Gilbert were up there as the Spoilers. But I don't know the years.
I don't know that either, Mike.
But, well-traveled, well, and you do have something in common. Both of you ran your own promotions there for a while. He and Maurice had Grand Prix there in the early 70s, and I hope we will get to talk to him about that. And that was one of the first places where Andre made his mark in North America when he first came over here. So hopefully he can give us a little insight to the early days of Andre the Giant, or Tom Ferre, as he was known in Montreal. But we'll take a quick break here, and then we come back. I'll kind of get Paul on the line with us. And again, I'll be back with us at some point. So let's take a quick break.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Tempe's of Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling
at the Academy Theater in Avondale State.
We're also at the Masquerade every month or so.
Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Championship Wrestling.
And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire,
formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there. Paul, please.
Speaking.
Hey, Paul. This is Michael Norris from P-State Pandemonium. Also got Jerry Oates on the line with us.
Okay.
Bobby Simmons hopefully will be joining us later on. He had some family issues he had to take care of this evening, but he's hoping to be on with us later on. Welcome to P-State Pandemonium.
Okay. And the first name, the second one is Jerry Oates, and please... Repeat the first name you told me.
My name is Michael Norris.
Mark?
Michael.
Oh, Michael. I'm sorry, Michael.
No, not a problem.
Okay.
And, let me give you a little bit better introduction to those, our listeners who may be listening. One of the members of a legendary wrestling family, the Vachon family. Of course, your brother Mad Dog Vachon, your sister Vivian Vachon, and your late daughter Luna all had outstanding careers along with yourself. And welcome to P-State Pandemonium. It's an honor to have you on with us.
Yes. Well, it's nice to be on here. Of course, you and your fans, you know that I haven't wrestled since 1987. So, I mean, I've been out of it for a while, something like 25 years. And when I did wrestle in Georgia way back then, it was, I hate to think about it, but it was in the mid-60s for 3 or 4 years. And I loved Atlanta. I love Georgia. We, my family, some of my family's still there, and yeah, I love the Georgia people and everything to do with wrestling, of course. So, shoot.
Georgia was a great state. Well, let's go back to the beginning of your career. Of course, Mad Dog got in. Was he ahead of you in the business?
Oh yeah. Mad Dog is 8 years older than I, and when he represented Canada in the 1948 Olympics in London, who, as you know, are happening again this year, he was only 18 years old, and I was 10. And when I found out that how well he had done in the Olympics and everything, I said, that's when I decided that's what I'm going to do. And sure enough, I won a silver medal in the Canadian Championship when I was 17 and a half years old. And after that, I called my brother, who was wrestling in Texas then, and I told him, I said, hey, Maurice, I just won a silver medal in the Canadian Championship. He said, that's enough of that stuff. He says, you're turning pro this year. You'll never make money. You'll never make money wrestling amateur, so, and the rest is history, as they say.
Hey, you started out not under the Vachon name. You used a Russian name at the beginning of your career.
Yeah, you've been reading the book, have you?
I'm a bit of a historian outside
Let me tell you how that happened. When Mad Dog decided that I was going to be in the professional wrestling, mind you, that summer I was only 17 and a half years old, and they arranged for me to go wrestle in Detroit, in the Detroit area, Detroit, Michigan. And and the promoter there, he used me for a couple of weeks, and I was happy because I was finally in the wrestling business. You know, not finally, but I mean, I was all set to go. And he used me for a couple of weeks, and he said, Paul, he said, you know, he said, you're going to be a good wrestler one of these days, but you look too young. He said, the people, they really don't believe in somebody that, you know, just a teenager. And sure enough, I was, you know. He says, we're going to have to let you go. And, oh, my God. I mean, my heart was broken. I was almost crying, you know. I said, Jesus, what am I going to do? So I told him, I said, you like my wrestling, but you can't use me because the people don't believe in me. He said, yeah. He says, you look too young. You look like a kid. So I said, what about if I grow a beard? And this promoter was Bert Ruby, and he was an immigrant from Hungary, and he was an old type wrestler, and he says, you go home, he says, and you grow a beard and shave your head and come back here. You'll look old enough. And he says, we're going to make a Russian out of you. He says, people, you know, it was in the middle of the Cold War, and people, there was a lot of animosity between the Russians and the U.S. and stuff like that. And Sputnik had just started the first space satellite had just started going around the world, and people thought that the Russians were going to bomb us from space, you know. And he says, there's a lot of heat on the Russians. He says, we'll give you a Russian name. And I said, okay, I'll do it. So I went home to Montreal, and a couple of months I grew my beard and shaved my head, and a couple of months later, and the same people that I wrestled in front of that had called me, you know, that didn't believe in me because I looked too young, they said, they'd say stuff like, "Go back home, you old Russian, you son of a gun, you this and that," you know. So that's really why I wrestled. That my name was Nikolai Zolotov, and if there's anybody around that's old enough, they would remember that. And yes, indeed, I did wrestle as a Russian in the first days of my career. I went to Texas, I went to Minnesota, and wrestled as a Russian. Sure enough. Yeah.
When did interesting, you and
it's
all. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Michael. And all these stories that we're talking about now, you're asking me questions about, they're all in the book, you know. And you guys promised to mention my book and where to get it. So please don't forget.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's on my list. I wanted to.
Okay. All right.
You're saying the book, but you've actually written several books.
Yes, actually, this last one, 4 or 5 years ago, I sat down and I started writing my memoirs, you might say, you know, just for the sake of remembering, see if I could remember all the places I'd been and all the things I'd done, and I started recounting them orally to people around. They said, "My goodness, are you." You should publish this book. And then I decided that I would call it When Wrestling Was Real. And that's what I called my first book. And then it got over so well with the readers. Like my brother Mad Dog was one of the first people that the first ones, and we printed, my wife and I, we printed it in our home. We bought a Hewlett Packard printer, and the first 50 books we stapled together and we sold it, and it went over. I mean, inside of a week I had sold them all. So and people said, "Boy, the first book, like the first couple of books I gave out, people came back to me and says we couldn't put this thing down." You know, they'd come back the next day and says, George the Animal Steel says, "I never read anything written by a wrestler more than 2 pages out of a wrestler's book." But he says, "Yours I read in one sitting, overnight," and I thought that was quite a review. So consequently, after I got that kind of response, I wrote another one, and then another one. They were all called When Wrestling Was Real, 1, 2, and 3. Now, they've been, you know, selling. We sell those on my website, which is butchervachon.com, and then my wife, who's a former Marine Staff Sergeant, since I retired, you know, from the wrestling matches 25 years ago, we've been doing fairs and festivals, and all over the Northeast, all over the United States, by the way, and we decided to write Wrestling with the Past, which is my latest book. And that has to do life in and out of wrestling and since wrestling. The original title was going to be Life After Professional Wrestling. And it's from the point of view of my wife and me together. We're co-writers on this thing. It's quite an interesting book. It caps off the first three. Latest book is, and you said you were going to tell people where to get it, and just let's mention that they can get it on Kindle, and they can get it on Amazon.com also.
Right. Now, what is it you guys do with carnivals?
Well, actually, I set up my memorabilia table. You know,
okay.
I've got pictures, I've got T-shirts, I've got books, of course, and I do a little bit of demonstration of a pitch, you know, for different things that I sell. My wife is an expert. She sells gifts and stuff like that, and generally keeps me in line. Keep in mind, she's a former Marine Staff Sergeant, and we work at that, say, from July until the middle of October, and after that, early November, we move into a mall in Barry, Montpelier, Vermont, and believe it or not, the old butcher has also been, for the last 12 years, has also been Santa Claus at the mall. And I know that's hard to believe, but believe me, I love every minute of it. And having raised 7 kids of my own, I love kids. I was from a family of 13. There's 6 older than me and 6 younger than me. And I always love children, and so does Santa, and it fits right in. And there you go. You asked me what my wife and I do at fairs and festivals. That's what we do. And also, I have a daughter. I have a daughter. I told you that still lives in Atlanta, and I go and see her once in a while. One of these days, maybe we'll get together and have a
good
cup of coffee.
We have something in common. I travel 9 months out of the year with Cole Brothers Circus.
Oh, yeah?
I'm not too terribly far from you. I'm actually on Long Island right now.
No
I'm
kidding.
I'm in Copaig, New York, which is on Long Island. There's 4 of us from the wrestling business that work for the circus. Ron West, who was a referee in many territories.
Yes.
And a booker. He's been with the circus 12 years. This is his 12th year. He got me on last year. Tom Renesto Jr.
Of course,
son. Tom works for us. Both of them are also on Long Island, and the fourth horseman is Bill Dundee, and he's on the island. So if New York survives, if Long Island survives the next month, we'll be doing something. We're all here.
Of course, I mean, seeing that you're in that field yourself, you know the origins of modern-day professional wrestling started in the carnivals. You know that,
yes,
don't you?
Yes, indeed.
And I talk about that in my books, and it's part of history of professional wrestling. And let me tell you, when I the first matches that I had... When I was only 17, I'm getting an echo here. Is that bothering you?
Yeah, that comes and goes. I think it sounds okay now, though.
All right. When I first started wrestling, as I said, I was only 17 and a half, 18 years old, okay? And my brother took me with him for a while up to North Bay, Ontario, and it was like a summer territory, and I talk about all those things in my book also. And the guys that were wrestling there, some of them during the winter time, they would go down south, like Texas and New Mexico and all that, and some in Louisiana, some in Florida, and wrestle there. And during the summertime, they would come. Well, these guys were already had been in the business. Like, I mean, I was the youngest one there, and I wrestled with guys in those days. I'm talking about 1955 then when I first started. And I wrestled with guys that were 30, some of them were 35, some even were even older. And the older ones remembered, you know, wrestling way back in the 30s during the first big depression that we had here in America. And they were wrestling in carnivals, and they had barkers, you know, that would, these guys would, I mean, one of the wrestlers would stand on the stage outside the big tent, and they would challenge the rest of the people, and these guys would take on all comers. You know, they had to be tough, and that's, of course, it's a prerequisite in the professional wrestling business. You know, if you're a sissy, you don't belong in this game. These guys were tough, and kept recounting old carnival stories and stuff like that, and that's how come I learned the history of professional wrestling. And also, I did a bit of barnstorming myself, too, the first year I was in the business. Traveled all over the United States with a not a traveling circus, but a barnstorming outfit that we do one night stands all over the country for about 6 months. I was doing that, and so all that is part of my books. You know, it's the history, it's my history, but I was at the crossroad of the history of professional wrestling. I mean, as I say, modern-day professional wrestling started in the carnivals, and then we switched from the carnival era to the television era. And I was part of both those eras. And I became, after a while, not only was I a wrestler, an amateur wrestler, a young wrestler, I wrestled as a barnstormer. I wrestled on TV, and after a while, I became a promoter in Montreal for Grand Prix Wrestling. My brother Mad Dog and I started our own promotion company, and we broadcast television programs, wrestling television programs from the Maritimes all the way to British Columbia, which is a distance of about 6,000 miles. That's covers Canada pretty well, and all, at the same time we were broadcasting in all 75% of all Canada's population lives within 100 miles of the American border. So all matches that we would broadcast, say in Winnipeg, Calgary, Montreal, Ottawa, and all those places, they also reached the northern United States. So I've been part of wrestling history. And after that, I mean, after I wrestled in Atlanta for a while, I started, when I was still in Atlanta, the promoter, Paul Jones, sent me to Japan, and I went from Japan to Australia, and I wound up wrestling in 33 different countries all over, at least four continents, being North America, Africa, Asia, and Australia. So, I mean, it's quite a history, and I'm still fascinated by it. I don't know. I'm not blowing my own horn or anything, but wait till you read the book. It's called Wrestling with the Past.
Absolutely. I can't wait to
listen. If I get too long-winded, you let me know, please.
Oh, trust me, we've had Dick Steinborn on the show. You
is that right?
Yeah. Well, Jerry, yeah. Dick Steinborn was Jerry's brother-in-law for many years.
Say that again. I'm sorry.
Jerry Otar, my co-host, Dick Steinborn was his brother-in-law at one point, and that just broke Jerry into the business.
Is that right?
So I'm used to long stories, Paul.
Yeah, I can imagine, especially with Dick there. I remember him well. I mean, I was friendly enough with him, you know, to share stories. His father was, Milo Steinborn was a hell of a wrestler, too. You guys know that, right? That Dick Steinborn,
That's where Dickie trained me, was in his gym in Orlando.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
I knew Milo. I admired him.
Yeah. Did he get on the mat and stretch your ass at all?
No, thank God. Thank God he didn't.
Dick Steinborn was a very, very, very colorful wrestler. I thought myself that, I mean, I met all kinds of wrestlers in my life. You know, I wrestled over 6,000 wrestling matches, but and we judged the best ones in our field with people that had the right timing. Do you understand what I'm talking about?
Oh, absolutely.
The right timing. Well, Dick Steinborn was a master. I mean, I learned just by watching him, and believe it or not, and I don't want to give the impression that he was much older than me, but he sure as hell had the talent, which lots of us didn't have. And in any case, he hasn't written a book by any chance, has he?
No, he needs to.
Yeah, well, by all means, if you're ever in contact with him, tell him I said hello.
I will do that for sure. And you know he has a million pictures.
Oh, yeah, well, of course. Oh, listen, I found one yesterday. When my brother and I finally teamed up, I mean, I was still in Atlanta when Steinborn was there, and when Mad Dog came down from the AWA to wrestle with me, and we decided to go back to the AWA, we needed pictures of us together. And I'll be darned, Steinborn took those pictures, and we used them for, well, I don't know, 15, 20 years to promote ourselves. And a couple months ago, I found an old picture of Mad Dog and I got some printed, and I distributed them, you know, at the wrestling memorabilia shows, and I also attend the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame, and we have Steinborn is still in the people's mind. I mean, the people that are in the business, you know. I don't.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
When was the last time that you worked in Georgia?
Oh my goodness, I'm trying to think. I went down, but I was not wrestling anymore, I don't think. I went down for Ted Turner, and I think, so that had to be way back, man. That had to be way back in the 70s. I'm not sure, but for sure, I left Georgia in about 1969 to go to switch to from the NWA, which was a jurisdiction in Georgia in those days, and we went to wrestle for the AWA, which was in the Midwest, and that was 1969. And I teamed up with my brother, and we became World Tag Team Wrestling Champions for the AWA, Mad Dog and I. And at the same time, I'd like to mention this. We, in 2004, we were together as brothers, inducted in the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame. And I'm wearing the ring now. I don't take it off. At the same time with my brother, Mad Dog. He's now, as I told you before, my brother Mad Dog was 8 years older than I, and I don't mind telling you, in October I will be 75, so that Mad Dog is going to be 83 the first of September. Oh, and let me tell you, while I got you on here talking about Mad Dog and his birthday, last year, my wife says, don't forget your brother's birthday's coming up. You got to call him. So I said, yeah, I'll call him. And all the time, this was already the 3rd of September, and I had in my mind that I was one day late, so I called up my brother Mad Dog, and I said, hey, Maurice, I said, I'm sorry. I called you to wish you a happy birthday, but I'm sorry. I'm a day late. He said, no, you're 2 days late. I called him on the 3rd, and his birthday actually was on the 1st of September.
Where's he living, man?
I actually met Doug with his wife, Kathy.
Where's he living?
He lives in Omaha, Nebraska, sir.
Does he really?
Yeah, he does. And I attend the Cauliflower Alley Club in Vegas every April, and it's an old-timers meeting that happens at the Barbary Coast Hotel in Las Vegas, and 400 or 500 old-time wrestlers, believe it or not, get together, their families, they all join, and we tell Bull, well, not to mention the rest of it, but Bull stories about how great we were and what old stories we have to tell about it. And I love it. I go there every year, and I also go to the, as I said before, the Hall of Fame meeting in Amsterdam, New York. And that's what we live for. I bring my memorabilia stuff, and it pays for my way there and back and stuff like that. And I really enjoy that life. And so on the way back, Mad Dog had been attending these things, but for the last couple of years, he hasn't been able to come. So I stopped. He's in Omaha, and on the way back, my wife and I drove all the way to Las Vegas. We like doing that because that's part of our life anyway. And we stopped to see Omaha, to see Mad Dog in Omaha. And another thing too, we played cribbage. You know, wrestlers, and when they have time on their hands in the dressing room, you know. They want you there at wrestling matches, say, an hour before the matches start, and sometimes you don't wrestle until the main event, and it's like 11 o'clock or something like that. So we sit around for hours. You know, you do a few push-ups, and then you sit down and play crib. And for years, Mad Dog and I had been doing that, and we had it set that we would play for a dollar a game. So I sort of forgotten about that, you know. So when I stopped to see him in Omaha just about a couple of months ago, and I played cards with him that afternoon, he beat me 3 games out of 4. And as I was leaving, he says, bye-bye, brother. He says, I love you both, you and your wife. He says, but before you go, where's my $3? we hadn't mentioned anything about the stakes, but he remembers from way back that we'd been playing for years, forever and ever, for a dollar. So, and I said, what do you mean? I you didn't pay me for my game. I won. Well, he says, in that case, you owe me $2. So I won one, and he won 3. So that's where Mad Dog is. He's in a wheelchair, as you know. He years ago, about the year before I had my last match, he was working out early in the morning, 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning in Des Moines, Iowa, where him and his wife were visiting her sister. And Mad Dog at the age of 56, he was still working out early in the morning, and this guy, around Des Moines, Iowa, I don't know if you know the topography, but the land is sort of flat, but right there in the road, there was one hump in the road, a hill that was blind. I mean, Mad Dog was just alongside the road working out, running or whatever, and this guy, a drunken driver that had been drinking all night, was on his way home and ran him over and left him for dead, and they wound up having to amputate his leg. It almost killed him. They had to fly him into to the hospital to save his life, and the surgeon told him, he says, you almost bled to death. He says, it's to your credit that people that have been working out all their lives have an extra pint of blood. And he said, that's that half a pint of blood, and he said, that saved your life.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, and he's a tough guy, man. And I love him. I still owe him $2, so the hell with him, I ain't paying him.
Now, Vivian was your daughter, right?
No. Vivian was our baby sister.
Your sister. I knew her. I broke in the business in 1970.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
so
that's about the time where she had started. Yeah, she was my baby sister. I mean, she was the baby of all 13 of us. And, of course, that's a sad story, too. I don't know if we should get onto that. She married one of the wrestlers, Buddy Wolf from St. Cloud, Minnesota. And she had gone to visit him. They were, at that time, they were sort of estranged. This is about 20 years ago. And he was in Minnesota, and Vivian and I were living on the farm with my mother. And anyway, I'm waiting for her. She had been driving back, her and her 10-year-old daughter. She's supposed to get there at 7 o'clock that evening, and it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and they haven't got there yet. And I said, oh my God, I didn't like the way that was going. And sure enough, about 2:30, I saw in front of the farmhouse a policeman with a flashing blue light and pulled up in front of the door and come to the door, and he says, you know, Mr. Vachon, he says, when the police shows up at your house at 2:30 in the morning, it's not to give you any good news. And sure enough, he said your sister Vivian, actually her real name was Diane, and he says, is Diane Vachon your sister? I said, yes. And he says, we sort of knew that, but he said she got killed by a drunk driver. There were two brothers themselves, one 19 and the other one 21, and they were so drunk that they didn't remember who had been driving when the police investigated that. And I said, oh my goodness, what about her daughter, Julie? He said, she got killed also. So, I mean, that's the sad part there. And
that's horrible.
Yeah.
Where did that happen?
Where did that happen? That happened halfway between Montreal and Mansonville, Quebec, which is where I was. And Montreal is, it happened in a little place called St. Gregory, you might say. And it's halfway between Montreal and the farm. And Montreal is about 90 miles from the farm where I was raised. And so, I don't know, right there in southern Quebec, part of the eastern townships of Quebec. It's, of course, it wouldn't mean much to the people down there, but where you are, but to us it meant a lot. And then, of course, and I know you guys didn't call me up to talk about those sad things, but as you know, about a couple of years ago, my daughter, Luna was my daughter. And,
okay. I knew
she was her aunt, my sister, Vivian, had been her idol, along with Mad Dog and myself. And she was so impressed by the wrestling life. When she was 12, she said, I want to be a professional wrestler. I said, what? You want to be a professional wrestler? You've got to be some kind of lunatic, you know. And that's, believe it or not, that's where the name came from, Luna.
It's
short
right?
for lunatic. I said, you got to be crazy. It's not a business for women. It's not even a real business for men, you know. In those days, I mean, where we were wrestling in main events in different territories all over the world, but it's not something that you would go into if you wanted to make lots of money. But having said that, nowadays, of course, there is, but there's a lot of difference in the wrestling business nowadays and what it was in our day and time. You know, there's all kinds of things that can be said about that. Lots of people still watch it, but as far as if you want to become a professional wrestler, forget it, because professional wrestling was always a very exclusive club. Never in the days of territories was there more than maybe 2,000 full-time professional wrestlers. I mean, people that could really call themselves professional wrestlers, because that was their sole way to make a living. And I was one of those things. And as I say, there was never more than 2,000 worldwide. You know how many there is now? 100, maybe, at the most.
That's about
because
right.
The world of wrestling has changed tremendously. It's a different business. We used to have TV shows all over the U.S., but they were local TV shows, and we used to use those TV shows to promote our house shows, and that kept a whole bunch of wrestlers working in different territories. Now they more or less do the same thing, except that the TV shows, they only need one big show. It doesn't matter whether they make money with that one or not, because it's going simultaneously in all the homes all over the world, on cable, on pay-per-view, and it's like a money printing machine. But I mean, I've seen some things on. To tell you the truth, I'm ashamed of it anymore. I don't watch it anymore. I was turned off at one time when I was just channel surfing, and I hope I don't start bawling here, because this has really, really insulted me, and I've been sick. Just in time, I was just channel surfing. I happened to stop on wrestling, and just in time to see the boss of it all, and we all know who he is. We used to call him Vinny. When he was a teenager himself and starting in the business, I just tuned in just in time to see him pull his pants down and have somebody kiss his butt on TV. So
I know.
I mean, that I almost threw up then, and since then, I've lost a lot of respect for him. Although I was friends with him, and I was friends with his father. Vince Senior. As a matter of fact, we were drinking buddies, and a fellow promoter too when I was part of Grand Prix Wrestling, and he was, of course, wrestling has been in their family. Well, now, having said all that, if you had hired somebody to take over the wrestling business and make a piss pot full of money, excuse my expression, I hope I don't insult nobody, but he wouldn't have done a better job than Vince McMahon. He has become, can you imagine, he has become a billionaire.
Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, it doesn't excuse him. He didn't have to do that for them. You know, he didn't have to do stuff like that. So, but I still like to get together with my friends, old friends, and talk, like I said before, we talk bull stories about how great we were and how much money we made and all that, and I never get enough of it.
What were some of your favorite territories?
The first great territory that I went to where I was really started to work on top, I mean, this is after having been all over the world, really, I mean, But the first great territory that I was really successful on it, and I became a top man, a main eventer, and everything, that was Atlanta, Georgia. No doubt about it. I don't know if you have listeners there that are still around from those days, but you have to remember that this is 50 years ago, almost. You know, almost 50 years ago. My memory is not that great, but there was the Torres brothers. You know, I had brought a young fellow from Canada with me and made a wrestling brother out of him. His name was Stan Vachon. And we had great feuds with the Torres brothers right there in Atlanta, Georgia. We used to do every week Atlanta, Georgia, Columbus, Augusta, Savannah,
Macon.
You know, Macon, and start right back again and the next week. And Mario Galento, they were big, and Leo Garibaldi was in charge of the whole thing. Paul Jones was the promoter, and so there may be still a few old-timers that remember those days, but as far as I'm concerned, that was the start of my glory road.
Well, I remember those days because, see, I was born and raised in Columbus.
Ah. Oh, Fred Ward.
Yes,
Fred
I remember
Ward.
You well. I remember. I was down there every Wednesday night.
Yeah, well, he's... there was a young Greg Peterson. Do you remember him?
Yes, oh, yes.
I remember him and Steinborn having the greatest matches, scientific matches. That you've ever seen, man. I'm glad I just remembered his name because I've been trying to rack my brains all day trying to think of the fellows that were there with me, and Freddie Blassie, of course, who became the big mouth of the wrestling business. There was a muscle man from Marietta, Georgia. His first name
Darryl
was Bob.
Darryl Cochran.
Say it again, please.
Darryl Cochran.
Oh, Darryl Cochran. Oh, okay.
And Bob Armstrong.
Bob Armstrong. Yeah, that's what it is. I just to remind myself, I had made some notes before you called me, and I couldn't remember his last name, so I called him Bob Muscle Man. He was a muscle
that's
man.
Bob Armstrong.
Yeah, Bob Armstrong. Yeah, the name fit him well because he had nice big arms, big muscly guy. And also great souvenirs because I wrestled a couple of times for the world championship right there in Atlanta, Georgia against Lou Tez, you know. And now to bring the people up on the world of wrestling today, Lou Tez, there's a professional wrestling hall of fame in Waterloo, Iowa that bears the name of the George Stragos Lou Tez Hall of Fame, and a couple of years ago I was inducted into that, and now there's a plaque on the wall that's going to be there forever, and on one side of Lutez is my plaque with my likeness on it, and on the other side is my brother Mad Dog. So, I mean, we're in pretty good company to live on and into history, and that gives us more to brag about when we get together.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Well, you certainly deserve it. Well, speaking of Georgia, I know you teamed with Stan quite a bit, and Mad Dog would come in with the matches you would have against the three Torres brothers. But you also teamed, I think it was either in Georgia or Florida, so you can correct me as to which. You teamed with Bob Morris, the Viking, quite a bit as well.
With Bob Horton, you said?
Bob Morris, the Viking.
Oh, yeah, that was in Florida. Yeah, that's right. I was exiled a little for a little bit from Georgia, and they sent me down to Florida, and Bob Morris, he was there, yeah, sure. We used to have an apartment together. He was quite a guy. He never lived to be... He was living such a wild life, though, that he never got... He never got this, and I'm not throwing stones at him because I was living. I always lived a sort of a wild life, but it caught up with him at a young age. I'm afraid. Bob Morris. Okay. And of course, the big deal in those days is I had Stan Bush on wrestling as my brother, and then of course the Torres brothers. There was three of them. I forget what the hell their name. Alberto, Ramon,
and then Ricky.
And Ricky, right. So when the feud got going real hot, Leo Garibaldi, who was the booker, he says, I wonder if we can get Mad Dog down here. There'll be three Vasans against the three Torres brothers. I said, well, I don't know. He's world champion up north, you know, for the American Wrestling Association, the AWA. He said, call him up. So I called him up. And, of course, Leo knew him anyway. I called him up, and I said, look, well, he says, I don't know if they'll let me go, you know. He says, I'm under contract with these guys here. They might not like that I'm going to wrestle for the NWA. So in any case, he fixed it up with the promoters, and he says, but I won't be able to do any interviews for it. And then we said... He said, I got a way to get around it. And he says, let me find out if they'll let me go. And sure enough, they give him leave to come, but he couldn't come to do the interview. So I said, so listen to this. This is a big match that we're going to bring the Mad Dog in. To watch over his kid brothers, and we're going to have a loser leave town match. And first of all, he says, which one of them, whoever loses, has to leave town. So Mad Dog, you know, there wasn't much of a chance for Mad Dog to take because, I mean, what the heck, he only had the chance to come once. So in any case. So he made an interview. You know, we told him send us a 2-minute interview. So this is how it started. He had it made in Minneapolis, St. Paul, at the TV station, and the shot starts with his back view of Mad Dog. All we can see is his head, in the back of his head, and he's banging on something. Bang, 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 bang. I mean, he's got a, and then the shot whitens, and we see that he's got a hammer in his hand, and he's working on a box of wood, and he says, the Torres brothers, this is, you know what I'm making, and he keeps banging, bang, bang, bang. And he says, and you know what I'm making? He says, this is the wooden box that the guy that loses is going to have to leave town in because I'm making a coffin for you. So, needless to say, my friend, after we showed that a couple times, the night of the matches at the Memorial Auditorium in Atlanta, we had to fight our way. It took us half an hour to get from the parking lot into the building because there was many people outside wanting to get in, and the place was already full. We had people with $100 bills in their hands and say, what's your Mad Dog, bring us in, we'll give you $100. Of course, there was barely room in the building for us to get in. And we milked that, as this story goes, for a while. And that's a bit of a history about the first territory where I started on my glory road. Of course, I've had many other successes, and I must say that my brother Mad Dog, although we got inducted into the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame as partners, and people, because of that, they think that we always wrestled as partners together. But let me tell you that Mad Dog was in the wrestling business for 40 years. I was in it for 32 years. And out of all those years, the only, if you were to add the years together, that would be maybe only 7 or 8 years altogether out of both our careers. Whenever Mad Dog wrestled by himself, he was very, very successful. And whenever I wrestled with myself, I mean, not with myself, but by myself, I wrestled all over the world in India. I wrestled in Karachi, Pakistan, in front of 85,000 people, who at that time was the largest crowd ever for wrestling matches anywhere in the world. I held that record for a while. And when I was very successful when I was on my own, and I was always very successful when I teamed up with my brother. So you couldn't ask for anything better. And once again, I hate to tell you guys what your job is, but don't forget, all these stories I'm telling you about are in the book, Wrestling with the Past, and you can get that on Amazon.com, and I hope you repeat it for me. I've already been on here about an hour, and I'm the only one that's mentioned this, so do your job.
Trust me. Well, you mentioned, let's talk about Grand Prix a little bit. You opened that in, what, 71, 72, somewhere there?
Yeah, 71. Well, first of all, let me start from the beginning. Let me know if I get a bit long-winded, because when I start telling stories, it turns out that I'm quite a storyteller. But and as the four books will prove, all the things I talk about are all true. True stories, and we were World Tag Team Wrestling Champions around Minneapolis in the Midwest area, and the old-time wrestler from Montreal, who himself had been NWA champion, his name was Yvon Robert, and his son had started wrestling, and wrestling was pretty well dead in Montreal, and he came to Minneapolis, and he talked my brother Mad Dog into going to starting a new company in Montreal, new promotion. And I told Mad Dog, I said, "Hey, we're world champion here, you know." I says, "Yeah, it's fine. We're gonna go in Montreal. It'd be nice to come back home and become promoters and stuff like that. But what's my part in this?" So Mad Dog said, "I know what's bothering you." He says, "That's because you're not going to be a partner. You're not going to be a partner." He says, "I'll tell you what I'll do." He says, "If you quit drinking," he says, "I'll give you half my share." You know. So that was one thing Mad Dog always did. When him and I started drinking together, he'd tell me I was a drunk. He'd say, "You drink too much," and stuff like that. You know, wrestlers are known to consume sometimes, not all of us, but I sure as heck did. And anyway, that was the condition. So we did get to Montreal, but he already had five different partners, and after a while, the money that they had invested was almost gone, and because nobody was running the show, and the main partner, Yvon Robert Sr., died of a heart attack, and then they're finding themselves not knowing what to do with the business, and Vern Gagne was there that night. There was lots of at a big show in Montreal, they asked Vern. They said, "This show tonight, and what do you think of the crowd?" Well, Vern said, "Well, I don't know." He said, "How many people did you have?" You know. The house was about half full. It was at the Maurice Richard Arena. Anyway, and they said, "Well, nobody knew what the crowd was." And they said, "Well," he said, "how many people does the house hold?" And they said, "Well, we don't know." He says, "Look," he says, "nobody knows. Who's promoting this thing?" He says, "You got five partners here. And nobody knows what the crowd was or how many people does the building hold." He says, "You guys will never make it." So they said, "Well, who do you think would have a chance?" to bring this together. And Vern, bless his soul, he says, well, I don't know. He says, you guys don't seem to be doing it, but he says, probably Paul would be, he could. And I said, I don't want that job. I didn't know how to promote myself. I mean, I was a wrestler and everything. And you know what? Every wrestler that's ever put on a pair of trunks, he thinks he can do a better job than the promoter does. But there's maybe 1 in 200 that can really become a promoter and be successful. In any case, to shorten my story so I don't talk about the same thing all night, they elected me not president, but the chief operating officer, and they turned the thing over to me. And when I took it over, the money that they had invested was already all gone. And 9 months after that, we had drawn because of the TV contracts that I got that went across Canada. We had drawn in the next 9 months $1 million. Now, $1 million nowadays is peanuts. But in those days, in the late 60s and early 70s, that was lots of money. And I was there. We were there doing that. I went to get French TV, of course, and English TV across Canada, as I said, and the northern parts of the U.S., and wrestlers. We were successful at it in big part because wrestlers trusted us. We had everybody in the world come and wrestle for us, wanted to wrestle for us because they knew they'd get a fair share of their money. You know, we had big stars like Edward Carpentier, Hans Schmidt, and in those days, Bruno Sammartino, all those guys. And then we were fortunate enough to bring in Andre the Giant, who had never been in out of Europe, and we brought him over to Montreal, and that was that was helped us on our big success. We had a match between him and Don Leo Jonathan, who was also himself a gigantic man, and we called it the match of the century. And from that stemmed a big part of our success. But after 4 or 5 years of promoting, my partners said to themselves, well, Jesus, if they had given me the job of becoming the promoter, because nobody wanted the job because they were going out of business. And they said, well, Paul's not going to do anything with it because he's not a promoter either. But when we drew all that money and had that much success, they said, well, geez, maybe we can do as well. So what do we need him for? So they started giving me a hard time, blocking all the things and all these things are I wrote about in the book, by the way. Finally, I was getting so much grief from them, although we were being very successful. I told Mad Dog one day, I said, I quit. I mean, wrestling for me was a good way of life, and I was always happy-go-lucky, and I was losing that. And I said, I'm going to go back to wrestling. He said, you know what? Me too. And we both sold our shares, and we told him, if you guys persist in the ways you're doing now, within a year you'll be out of business. And not to sound like a prophet or anything, that's exactly what happened just about to the day when we sold our share. They went out of business, and Grand Prix Wrestling is no more. But there's hundreds and hundreds of tape wrestling shows, and people still watch them. They belong to classic wrestling, some of them. And we were successful doing that. And that was part of my job in the promoting business. And, of course, I became very good friends with Andre the Giant. And he became one of the biggest stars in the wrestling business. And I have other things to say about Andre the Giant that were very interesting. But you know, we don't have all that much time. But, so what else?
Well, let me ask you,
Stan, now.
Say that again?
Where's Stan?
Stan? He's somewhere in Omaha. Not Omaha. I'm sorry. Nebraska. And I haven't seen him in about 20 years.
Is that right?
I understand, yeah. I understand we had him wrestling as my younger brother, but let me tell you, he had a full head of hair, and he looked like my younger brother, but he was actually 3 years older than I. So that would make him maybe 78, 79, and I heard that he's still living, but it's not, you know, he lives halfway around, halfway across North America from where I live. I live in Vermont right now, right on the Canadian border, about 20 miles away from the farm I was raised on in Canada. I cross the border every day, just go back and forth, and I love this country. It's beautiful, just like Georgia. Hello?
Here's what I have a question on a territory, and I'm not sure if it made your book or not, but you spent a few months in 1977 in Mobile, Alabama, of all places. It was so odd, because I have a little background. I grew up in Mobile.
Yes.
That territory is what the territory that I grew up watching, the Lee Fields promotion down there.
Yes.
Of course, being also a fan that read magazines and everything, I certainly knew who Butcher Bashaud was, and it was so odd to see you come to Mobile, Alabama. How did that come about?
You know what? Mobile, Alabama, boy, that was quite a bit after I had wrestled in Georgia, actually. After I stopped promoting, I called up my friend Vince McMahon Sr. and I said, "Look, I'm not promoting anymore." He says, "When do you want to start?" So, and that was he ran, of course, the biggest territory at that time in the world, and that was emanated out of Madison Square Garden in New York. And he gave me some dates. I wrestled for him for a couple of years, and then after a while, he says, "Well, you're going to have to leave for a while. We'll bring you in later." So I went to California and hooked up with my friend Leo Garibaldi that had become the booker in Los Angeles. And after a while, I ran out of that too. And then I had gone to Japan with a fellow named Ken Mantell. And excuse me, my voice is sort of getting scratchy, guys. I hope that we don't have to cut this short, but I'm going to try and keep it going for a while. Let me have a drink here, okay? Hang on.
Okay.
Yeah, and Ken Mantell said, "Listen, I've been offered a job running the Mobile office." Right, that's what it is. And I was it the Fields that was that owned that territory for
Lee Fields,
in those days. Yeah, and that's it. I had my son Pierre living with me at that time. We loaded up the car, went from California to Mobile, Alabama. We were there for a while. It was sort of pioneering, you know. I mean, I didn't mind. I was having a good time, and Mobile was a hell of a town. I enjoyed every minute of it. I remember going from there to wrestle in Mississippi, the Meridian, Mississippi, of all places. I wasn't making any money or anything, but I had such a good time, and I enjoyed every minute of it. And I must tell you that all my life I decided that after when I left the farm that I was going to milk cows, and I was not going to milk cows and shovel manure anymore. And for the rest of my life, I would do what I wanted to do, travel all over the world, and be in the wrestling business and be happy. And whenever I got to a spot in my life where I wasn't happy. I said, the hell with it, and I'm going to do something else and go some other place. And Mobile was one of those places where that it was a relief. I didn't care really if I was making much money, but we had lots of fun. Mobile was a fun town, by the way. as all the towns where I was, they were fun towns too.
Even though they made you work with Mike Boyette every night, right?
Hey, listen, I enjoyed wrestling with everybody, and I have guys that still come back to me at the wrestling convention, especially the CCA, old guys that were what we call carpenters, and they said, boy, Butcher, we remember wrestling with you when we were just starting. We didn't know what to do, and they said, you guided us. And I tried to explain to them, I said, of course, that it was my job, because what's the sense in wrestling against somebody that you beat in 2 minutes. I mean, there's no sense to that. It doesn't make you look good. It just makes the other guy look terrible. And it was always in my philosophy that the better the guy looks, the stronger he looks, the stronger and better I'm going to be when I beat him. But if I make him look like an idiot and don't take care of him, then I am beating anybody and doesn't do me any good, that's a lesson I learned a long time ago, and I live my wrestling life by it, and I have enjoyed every minute of it, and I'm still enjoying it because I'm still part of it. You know.
Did you ever work Louisiana?
Yes, but not in depth. I remember one time, first of all, when I worked there as a Russian the first time. When I went to Texas, they used to send us to Baton Rouge. Baton Rouge and Shreveport, Louisiana.
Right.
And even one time for Bill Watts, I worked for him shortly, and he sent me to New Orleans, and I love Louisiana because, you know, first of all, it's full of French people, and they still speak French, these people, I don't know if many people nowadays know that, but they started as French settlers in Nova Scotia and New Brunswick and Quebec, and then got deported when the British took over, and they drifted. They put them in ships. Oh, that's part of the book also. I tell that story in the book. And they gathered the women and they put them in one ship, and the men, this is the British did that in 17-something or other, and they set them adrift in the Gulf of St. Lawrence, and they drifted all the way around the Florida Panhandle, drifted and landed in Louisiana and in the Big Bay that's down there, and that's who the Cajuns are.
Yep.
Because they originally came from Acadia, which is the coast of Maine and Nova Scotia, and that was called Acadia, and when they got exiled to Louisiana, they said, we're from Acadia, and the name got bastardized to go from Acadia to Cajun, Acadien in French, and Cajuns, and nowadays they speak still, some of them still speak French, and I understand them when I can go down there and shoot the bull with them. So, did I get away from something here?
No, that was good. How about, did you work for Don Owens?
Oh, we went, Mad Dog and I, we when we were in, wrestling for the AWA as world champion, we went to Japan for a 1 week. It was a TV deal. In any case, we stopped, and one of our flights would stop, I think, in Seattle, and Don Owens was the promoter there, right?
Correct.
Seattle and Portland. Matt Dog had wrestled for him earlier for 2-3 years. He was really glad to see us, and he put us on the card. And I met for the first time Jimmy Superfly Snuka that time. But anyway, I wrestled in Oregon, but not very much. After I was in California, after a while, I wrestled in California, and then I think they sent us up. They flew us in there. We wrestled in Portland and another place. One of my brothers and I, and that's about it. Not very much. So to answer your question, yes, I wrestled there, but not very much. I knew Don Owens. I knew his reputation. He was a nice man, a good payoff man. You know, we always judge our promoters by how they, what kind of payoff guys they were. So
he was very good.
Yeah, he was a good man for our business. He was a credit to the game. And I met all kinds of people like that in my life, and I'm speaking like I'm on my way out, but I already told you I was going to be 75 in October, but I'm hoping to still be around for a while. And I don't know if I should talk about this now, but my fourth book, which is called Wrestling with the Past, I've in the past couple of weeks or three, I've been negotiating with some movie people. They want to make a feature movie about my life and times. So you can spread that around, although it's not done yet. I'm having to hunt up a good agent to take care of my interests, because I don't know about movie contracts and stuff like that, but it's in the works, and I'll keep you informed on how it's going.
Good for you.
Yes, sir.
How about you work with Crockett Sr.?
Say that
Carolina,
again?
Jim Crockett Sr. in the Carolinas?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
What a good
yes,
man
sir.
He was. I didn't work for him. I worked for his sons. But
yeah. My brother and I worked there. Not very long. But we wrestled one night against George Becker. Could that be? And Sandy Scott. Did that ring a bell? In any case, Jim Crockett. Jim Crockett. We had such a good match. He says he came to the dressing room after. He says, "Gentlemen," he says, "I have just seen the best tag team match I ever seen in my life," and they. I mean, that kept me going for years and years. I thought that Jim Crockett, if he thought that, we must have been doing something right. Yeah, I wrestled for him. And later on, in years after I had been promoter myself, after I left the New York territory, I went to wrestle for his son. And that was pretty successful, too. I mean, I was blessed with... You know, I sound like I'm bragging, but I was blessed
no,
with
no,
everywhere,
you're not.
Everywhere I went, I was successful. If you know, and I judge my success not by the money I made, but how I enjoyed myself and enjoying the wrestling club as it was then, and the wrestling world, and we belong to a very special. I don't have to tell you guys this. We belong to a very special business, and it's not. Listen, I once read someplace. Somebody wrote as a quote, and this is it. They said, "If you find, in order to make a living in your life, if you find something to do that you really love, you'll never have to work another day in your life. And that's exactly the way I look at it. I mean, I never thought of it as a job, although I made a living at it. I raised my families. I have children that were born in three different countries, some of them in India, some of them in the States, some of them in Canada. And I've been happy in this business all along, so I think it was a great success. And that's what I talk about in my books, gentlemen. And don't forget, you promised to tell people where to get it. That's on Amazon.com. You know what? Since you've been talking, Mike, I haven't heard you mention that once. I mean, of course, I haven't given you a chance either, so I suppose.
Let me back up a little bit. You were talking about the movie deal that you're failing to mention. That would be your second movie. You were actually one of the stars of The Wrestling Queen, which, of course, was about Vivian.
Yes.
Quite a bit of the Grand Prix promotion, and you were, of course, listed as the promoter there and the man in charge. And great movie, by the way. Great movie.
It wasn't exactly what they had started to do, but as a matter of fact, it showed in a lot of cinemas, a feature movie, all through Canada and parts of the U.S., but it was more, I enjoyed doing that. I enjoyed doing that more. I mean, it was more of a documentary than anything, but it really told the story of the Vachon brothers. Not the Vachon brothers, but the Vachon family. And if you remember, if you've seen it, they talked to my father in that thing. And there was pictures of us getting together on the farm, and my mother is there, and she's never been on camera, nowhere. Of course, she's long gone nowadays. Now I started talking about that. Oh, yeah. And all those stories are in my book. And another thing, too, you say that wasn't the only movie that I was in, because when I was in India, I did three or four different movies with Dara Singh. Dara Singh was the biggest movie star in for about 40 years in India, and he was also a top wrestler. He had started in the wrestling world, and he was so good that they made a movie star out of him, and I worked on the movies with him, against him, and I think I worked on four movies with him, and I got killed four times, because naturally, the French-Canadian lumberjack from Canada was not very popular. I remember going to one of the premieres of the movie. This particular movie was called Rustum et Rome. Now, that means champion of Rome. And anyway, at the premiere, the place is packed. Normally, most of the movie-going places in India were outside. But this one was a premiere of a big movie, and I went. It was inside. And as I'm watching this movie, people, they were like a bunch of wrestling fans. Every time they'd see me come on the screen, they'd start booing and throwing junk at the screen, you know. And I said, Jesus, what sort of wild place is this? So, and even the finale of the movie is where I get killed, and, you know, they throw me to the lions, I don't remember, something like that. But in any case, even though I got killed in the movie, as I'm stepping out after the premiere showing of that movie, Rustum et Rome, is done, people still want to kill me. As I'm going to my car, there's thousands and thousands of people that couldn't get in, and some that were just coming out. They tried to turn my van. I had a German bodyguard, and he had a Volkswagen bus, and they just about turned that thing over. I barely got out of there alive. So that's just to mention the bad experiences, although it all adds color. It all adds color to my story in the book. But and I'm glad that you mentioned that other movie, Wrestling with the was called, no, the Wrestling Queen, yeah, right? Yeah, right, the
Wrestling
Queen. Yeah, and there was the guy that produced that was a fellow named Wayne Willens. He was from North Carolina, and he had come to make a story about my sister, Vivian, and he wound up calling it Wrestling Queen, and we worked like for 6 months on that, you know. I mean, I didn't do much work. I just showed up, and they interviewed me, and I remember, and there's a scene where we got together at the beer garden in Montreal, and they got me directing the Hum Papa band, you know. I don't know if you remember that scene, but I was a young man then. But if you see, I had stopped wrestling for a while, and just a beer drinker and a promoter, and I got to weigh 340 pounds, so I looked pretty big in that. But all those things are all in the book, and I've enjoyed every minute of them. Okay, your turn.
Before we let you go, I know you go to the Cauliflower Alley Club in April, but are you aware of the Gulf Coast Reunion in Mobile every year, right?
Oh, listen, my friend, I've been invited so many times there, and every time I see the guys, was there one guy named Smith that comes to the CAC?
Charlie Smith, yes.
Yeah, he talks to me every year, and every year I promise to do my best, but I tell you, this coming year, there's a very, very big possibility that I'm going to go. And I've been wanting to go because, after all, they get all the guys that were, you know, part of the business in the South that attend this thing, and I was, you know. So I want to go, and unless unforeseen. Right now, my plans are to go, and the next one. It's what is it in
the first weekend of March.
Of what?
March next year. The first weekend.
March.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
And,
okay.
Charlie's on the board of directors there, as am I. So we will make sure whatever you need, you will be taken care of. But we need to get you there.
Well, that's good. My wife the. The Marine Staff Sergeant is going to come with me, although she don't know too much about that sort of thing, but she drives. She's the driver. She won't let me drive. She says, your luck is about ready to run out because I've driven millions of miles. You know, I've traveled 8 million miles in my wrestling career, and a lot of it, probably half of it, was done by cars. You know, and you know how wrestling was in the early days. We used to wrestle sometimes 7 nights a week, and night after night we'd drive for miles and miles and miles. And when we were through, we'd get back in the car and go down the road again. And I enjoyed it. I keep saying that. I enjoyed every minute of it. But yeah, right. Well, I'm planning to go. And there was... up until now, there was something that got in the way, and now this one thing is out of the way. So I'm planning to go in March, right?
Yes, sir. First weekend in March.
Tell my friend Charlie Smith to let me know. You guys, well, anyway, you got my phone number, right?
Yes, sir. We'll certainly keep in touch with you. And I do want to plug your books, When Wrestling Was Real, Volumes 1, 2, and 3, and Wrestling for the Past, which is your latest. And now, are they all available on Amazon?
No, sir. Just the last one. But the first three are available on ButcherVachon.com.
ButcherVachon.com, great website.
Yes, sir.
You've also got hats and T-shirts available there.
Yes,
and,
all kinds of stuff.
So be sure and visit that. And Butcher, it has been an honor to have you on with us, sir. This has been a thrill.
Thank you very much. It's been an honor for me, and I enjoyed every minute of it. And anytime you want to do it again, just let me know, Mike.
Absolutely.
And I want to wish you peace. to all of your listeners. What, is this going out on what? On
this is on the internet. It's on Blog Talk Radio.
Oh yeah.
It is broadcasted live, and then we also archive it so people can go back months from now and listen to it. And I will, as soon as the link is archived, I will go to several websites and post up that. Did you get fans all over? There's a website called Kayfabe Memories. It's broken down by territory.
Kidding.
People talk about all the territories, and I will post this in the Montreal section. There's also a Grand Prix section there. People talk about Grand Prix and the Maritimes and stuff like that. So
Okay, that's wonderful, and we'll, let's keep in touch, okay? And you guys
definitely
let me know. Just so I know, you know how to tell people how to get this book. How do you do it? Come on now.
Go to bookofthesun.com to get the first three. And so the latest one is on, available on Amazon and also for Kindle.
Yeah, that's it.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much.
I don't have a Kindle.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Paul. I appreciate your time, and we will definitely have you on again.
Okay, very good. I'll count on that. Thank you very much, and bye-bye, and good luck, and have a good life to everybody.
Thanks for being on with us.
Bye.
What a great guest. Well, I tell you.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
Great guy. Well, hey, Bobby wasn't able to join us tonight, but hopefully everything is working out there in that
situation. I hope so. I really do.
I'm glad to hear that you're doing better. And,
I'm doing good.
On your loss. And,
I appreciate it.
Happy to know that you were in our thoughts and prayers, and as always. And we'll get together next week with the three of us, hopefully, and we'll see what kind of trouble we can get into then.
Well, I'm sure we will, Mike.
All right. Good night, Jerry.
Good night, Mike. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.